your car.
Let me see if I still got it.
Got one of the vocal cords. It's been a while.
All right, guys. That was beautiful.
We're back.
We're so fucking back right now.
So back.
Holy shit. Shane, it's Giants time. Let's not even waste any more time.
It's the G-men, bro. So we're going to be positive yet again, even though Ryan said 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I don't know, time's an illusion, that the Giants are not going to have more than 5 wins. I didn't even look at the schedule, but we'll talk about it later.
2 wins.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it later. And I'm honestly, at this point, I'm not going to disagree because this isn't a case of, oh, Matt Stafford's old, they got injury histories, whatever. This is just a mess from top to bottom. But like, we've going in this offseason, we're not going in writing anybody off quite yet. We're going to try to be positive, trying to find some potential fantasy upside on a team that is going to be very severely faded. So we'll do what we did last week with personnel and administration changes. So the Giants fired the O-line coach and brought in the Raiders O-line coach, which isn't like stellar in comparison to what they could have done. But based on the trajectory that the Raiders were ended their season on in the upper echelon of PFF rankings for their O-line, we can believe that it's not going to be as bad as it was last year. So they kept their OC, which I think is honestly kind of fine given the situation of, we know why this team was bad last year, and it's not really due to the offensive scheme. It's just because this team was so anemic from top to bottom, and then the team just kind of gave up because they only had like 2 weeks of fun with the Italian stallion. And then everybody was just like, we don't give a shit, we're getting our ass. Because like, what was that game on Monday night when it was like 54-4 or some shit against the Cowboys, like in the first quarter?
40-0 was the final score in that game,
I think. So they did cut 9 of their O-linemen. They signed 6. One of them accounts for 60% of the money spent on O-line this season, which totally eclipses, for all 6 players, $24 million. The Giants are giving Brian Burns more money than 6 brand new players coming to the team that to protect their $40 million investment of Daniel Jones. So they also let their best offensive weapon walk to a division and say a division rival in Saquon Barkley. They signed Allen Robinson. They signed Drew Locke. They signed Devin Singletary because he popped off in Houston, and they gave Isaiah Hodgins one more year. There's a trajectory of conversation here of checking all the boxes.
Hell yeah, let's do it.
So now we're going to break down the draft. Pick 6 overall, they went with the highest ceiling possible in the draft class with Malik Nabers. Go listen to our old episodes and read our rookie guide, $10, for more on this him as a prospect. He rules, everybody loves him, and so should you. Round 4, they drafted Theo Johnson to fill the gap of retiring Darren Waller to keep Daniel Bellinger's seat warm. Round 5, they drafted Tyrone Tracy, who we didn't initially scout in the process, but I've seen him fly off draft boards and rookie drafts because people believe that somehow he's going to take Saquon's job, even though by going in before the research, I believe this was just the committee.
Yes.
Apparently he's a converted wide receiver. We'll talk about it later. So that's really it for this instance of offense. It's another team making as little splash outside as possible, outside of one player on the side of the ball, because they spent a lot of money and draft capital on defense. So we're going to break down the tendencies of the offense so we can kind of guess expectation of target share as well as run pass percentage. So last year, the Giants ranked 8th in passing rate and 11th in 11 personnel, which means one tight end, one running back, 3 wide receivers, but however, ranked 30th in expected points added, right behind the Patriots and the Jets. Or sorry, right before the Patriots and the Jets.
That's bad.
Not really good company to be attached to, right?
No, I would agree with that.
So they were also at a negative 0.13 expected points per attempt on rush attempts in 11 personnel, which was the highest rated efficiency on the ground they saw last year.
Okay.
So really fucking bad running the ball as well. Their offense was extremely predictable because they were in 11 personnel. They were throwing the ball 71% of the time when in that setup. So compared to the next highest rate of passing at 54% in 12 personnel. So defenses quickly understood they could just sit back and watch Daniel Jones, Tyrod Taylor, and Tommy DeVito fuck it up.
Yeah.
Per FTN, their O-line is ranked 29th in 2024. So just keep that in the back of your mind. So we're going to break down quarterback here so we can see if we can find something of value. As I mentioned earlier, I really don't think this offense is necessarily bad, but I do feel the talent disparity is very dramatic compared to the rest of the NFL. When your starting quarterbacks are bottom five in basically all metrics, but rushing, it really makes your, it really makes it difficult for your team to push the ball down the field and be successful. So Daniel Jones was tied for 18th on most tackled QBs on the season when he only played in six games last year.
Are you kidding me?
He had 30 sacks in six games, the same amount of sacks that Geno Smith had the whole season.
Oh my God.
Yep. That's roughly five sacks per game, which is atrocious.
He was sacked on every seventh drop back last year.
Jesus.
Those are Justin Field numbers, bro.
But like, and he can move too. It's not like Kirk Cousins. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
he's a runner. He's really good at. I remember betting a few of his rushing lines.
No, that O line was like paper, dude. Like they were so porous. So Daniel Jones is only actually 400 yards short of Tyrod Taylor, who played 11 games, and 200 yards short of Tommy DeVito's passing numbers, who played in 9 games.
Wow.
So. Daniel Jones did throw 2 touchdowns and 6 picks in that time frame, so he has a much worse efficiency metric than both of those players. But it does go to show you that the offensive scheme and play calling in 2022 really did mask his deficiencies as quarterback and used his ability to run and keep the ball under 5 yards, so he wouldn't do shit like that.
Yeah.
And I really don't... I know Tony's been, like, banging the drum for Drew Lock. I really don't want to say that there's a QB controversy. I just think it's a race to the bottom in which we do see Drew Lock at some point, either if it's because Daniel Jones isn't ready for the season or he has a really bad game and they put Drew Lock in just to see what happens.
Yeah, it's like saying no offense, you know,
this dude fucking sucks.
I have a theory. I was going to tell you, I said this off air or maybe on air if I forget to cut it, that I think that the Seahawks and the Giants are intertwined in a cosmic sense.
Really?
Both the Seahawks and the Giants gave big-ish money contract extensions to mid quarterbacks, and they both have cheaper backup quarterbacks with youth that are cost controlled for teams that should be in teardowns. To me, I think Drew Lock and Sam Howell will be the starting quarterbacks for both of these teams at the end of the year.
That makes sense, right? Like, here's $3 million. Where else are you going to go, right?
Well, Drew Lock is
26.
And he has a $5 million one-year contract, but it's fully guaranteed. He is like the third or fourth highest paid backup quarterback in the league this year.
That's crazy, dude.
Just saying.
So he does put a different type of mustard on this team, though, because he plays much differently than Daniel Jones.
He's not much of a runner at all.
No,
right?
he's very Bronco-style, tall, white statue quarterback.
Yeah.
So his yards per attempt are minimally higher than Daniel Jones. Jones had a 4.2 average yards per attempt in 2023, which is like absolutely atrocious. I'm pretty sure there's running backs with higher average yards per carry than that kind of average yard per attempt. But he also doesn't run the ball. Daniel Jones does have a higher career accuracy average of 64.3, while Drew Lock has a career accuracy of 59.7. But they're both like basically on the same sampling of bad, but different ends of the spectrum. So I do believe while more in the check down and deeper throw to the Hyatt-Hodgson types will come with Drew Lock compared to where Daniel Jones is more under center, as he has one of the lowest deep ball percentages of quarterbacks in the league. It does add an interesting wrinkle to the puzzle of who to value based on who you kind of believe is going to be the quarterback. So we'll do some quick paper math real quick to see expected totals if either quarterback plays the whole year. So Daniel Jones, based on career history, he has 10.2 yards gained per pass completed with a completed average accuracy of 64.3 on 518 attempts, which is what they did last year, is 333 completions for around 3,400 yards, which would come close to his 2022 numbers.
Damn.
Drew Lock, 11.3 yards gained per pass completed with a career average accuracy of 59.7 on 518 attempts.
59% completion. Let's go. Let's ride.
On 518 attempts is 309 completions for around 3,500 yards. So to show you that A dot matters, even though you're missing basically 30 passes.
Yep.
And obviously everything would have to go right within these numbers for the vacuum. for it to exist. But honestly, I'm going to take the guy right now who rushes the ball about five times per game, which is Daniel Jones. Because obviously in fantasy, as you can be a shitty ass quarterback, but if you're going to run the ball for 80 yards, you're putting more points on my board than this dude who's going to maybe throw two touchdowns.
Yep.
Okay.
Daniel Jones is currently QB 30 and Drew Lock is currently QB 46. Both guys are not going to be drafted. They're going to be waiver wire fodder. And unless you're in super flex, it's going to be real kind of difficult to take them in earnest, believing they will win you your week. I will, however, take Daniel Jones as a potential bi-week streamer as in 2022, as he did have over 100 rushing attempts. The ceiling is going to be there, even though there is an ACL injury and the offense as well. He's going around the quarterbacks of Bryce Young, Justin Fields, Bo Nix, and Russell Wilson. So real fucking ugly.
Except for Justin Fields. Anyways, yeah.
I mean, he's on a better offense, right? Like, he's going to start at 1.2, another guy who's cost-controlled on a teardown team.
Yep.
So last year, the target share was pretty abysmal with 98 targets going to the running back, 20.2%. Thank you, Saquon. 279 targets going to the wide receiver, 57.5, which is basically 150 targets to Wandale and Darius Slayton, then sprinkled across the remaining corpses of the receiving room. Darren Waller still managed to crack 70 targets in 12 games, which I don't think was a real number until I actually like did more data digging on that, because I didn't think he played 12 games last year. I thought he only played like four.
It's hard when you suck, you know, like,
right.
It's hard to be remembered.
So right now the wide receivers are Malik Nabers, Juan Daddy, Slayton, Shepard. I always mix up Slayton and Shepard. Like, you could put a gun to my head and be like, what team? Like, Giants. And I don't know who scores more points. Right. Jalen Hyatt, Isaiah Hodgins. So if they are running three wide receiver sets, it's basically Juan Daddy in the slot, Slayton out, and Slayton and Hyatt out wide, and Nabers playing the X, in my opinion, because I believe Nabers kind of nuked all the targets to Shepard and Hodgins, just based on him taking targets from Wandale and Slayton. So it kind of rolls downhill with those two guys I mentioned doing cardio.
Yep.
So Waller, assuming he's gone, basically frees up 70 targets on that offense, and it's not obviously all going to go to Theo initially, and Bellinger, even with 11 personnel. I think those guys can get like 40.
Sure, though. Come on.
Who knows, right? This offense is very much right. Who knows.
It'll be a crapshoot. Yeah, that's for sure.
It's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make extreme claims, but I wouldn't be surprised if Malik Nabers has a frustrating 120 target season. He initially started last season in college in the slot, but as the year progressed, they basically put him majority of running out wide. But you can see him kind of, if you watch his tape, which we talk about in a rookie guide, you can kind of see him all over the field. So I can definitely see a target breakdown between targets of 110 to Nabers, 70 to Juan Daddy again, 50 going to Slayton, 50 going to Hyatt, if we keep the expectation of around 280 targets to the wide receiver. But if we increase that value, as we expect targets to be funneled from Waller and the running back room because they don't have a pass catcher like Saquon,
right.
or a crutch they can leave on like Saquon where they could before, we could potentially see 120 to 130 targets to Nabers and an uptick across the board to all receiving options. Maybe that's probably my rookie fever, but I don't think you're going to draft a guy that high and build your entire franchise pretty much around him next year to not throw everything you have at him to see what the fuck is up.
Right.
Do you think that they're going to use like Nabers predominantly out of the slot or outside, or is it more going to be like 50-50 just to see, like you said, just to see what he excels at?
I think they're going to start him in the slot just to give him like comfortability of like approximation, right? Because like obviously Daniel Jones isn't going to hit him on a 40 yard bomb, right? So I think they're going to try to scheme him in space. Like Brian Daboll is a good offensive coordinator and head coach, you know what I mean?
I have a theory about this Giants offense. Like, you know, you build a group of skill set dudes around your quarterback to complement your quarterback skills, right? Well, I think what the Giants did is they have a bunch of receivers that complement Malik Nabers. So you have Slayton is the possession guy, Jalen Hyatt is the Brian Thomas, and Wandale Robinson is the short area guy. So your goal is to get Malik Nabers in favorable matchups between like 10 and 20 yards.
Yep.
The thing that makes Malik Nabers so good is that, sure, could he get 130 targets at like a 58% completion rate? Yeah, sure. But he's also a yards after the catch monster.
Yeah. And that's why I really do believe that he's the one person on this offense who can make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Yeah,
So he's got the hands, like I was talking about with DK. He's got the hands to just put it in an area and just go make the catch.
He's definitely in the lazy comp is Ja'Marr Chase, right? Of like the dude can run routes. He's explosive. You kind of just put it around him and he can make a lot happen, right? Where like I feel like DK Metcalf is more of like a Mike Evans type of like a deep ball specialist, contested catch kind of player. Okay. Right, where like DK doesn't really like run routes, and he's like he's a good yak guy because of his size. Where like Neighbors wins based on speed and technique, in my opinion.
Right.
Okay. More finesse.
Yeah, he's much more finesse. It's a very good way to put it. So right now, Malik Neighbors is wide receiver 20, right behind Stephon Diggs, DJ Moore, and ahead of Devonta Smith, Pittman, and DK Metcalf. Third round is real rich for a guy in a bad offense with a bad quarterback, and it's asking for a lot. But honestly, if we're swinging for the fence at this point, I would take Neighbors over the known commodities of Devonta Smith, Michael Pittman, and DK Metcalf, just because the upside ceiling is completely there. Like, you're going to burn yourself no matter what, but I would rather get burned swinging for the fence as opposed to being like, cool, I get three games of 30 points for DK Metcalf for the year, and then I get 7 points consistently, right?
I would take Neighbors over Metcalf. I would take Neighbors over Devonta Smith, and I would take Neighbors over Michael Pittman.
Well, Metcalf, Smith, and Pittman, are they going to get over 100 targets?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Okay, all right. So that's a good comp. Okay.
So as a wide receiver on my team, or potentially wide receiver slash flex in my league, I think you can do a lot worse with potential ceiling and upside. So give me all the shares and watch me bitch about Daniel Jones in week 9 for missing an easy 10 points on my team.
Yeah.
Wandale's a 15th rounder. Slayton and Hyde are 18th rounders. They'll have some play for you in deep play flexes. And if someone gets hurt, it's going to be extremely hard to guess which one and when they'll have viability. Wandale is kind of the only guy else I want to have on this team just based on raw target share, because he was seeing a lot of shares last year.
Yeah.
As again, we're going to assume Waller vacating X amount of targets. Is his ceiling 12 points? Sure, but we play PPR for a reason. There's going to be tight end targets this year. Sorry, Ryan. But Bellinger and Theo don't even have ADP on 4-for-4. So we're gonna say that these guys are
Ryan shitty mid-tier kind of tight end of the week.
So really nothing worthwhile to me unless Theo goes absolutely like record-breaking insane or consistent injuries happen to other receiving weapons on this team for me to actually like place trust in this tight end room. So I had a weird moment looking at the running backs for this team, because for some reason I felt like the perception of Devin Singletary was that he blew up in 2023 and he kind of came out of nowhere compared to his time on the Bills. But that was a complete smokescreen and brainworm on my end, because he actually had his worst efficiency metrics on the Texans. His volume was higher, but he saw less yards on the ground as well as less receptions. So I did have to dig into his points per game, thinking that maybe that was high or something, but he was 38th in points per game with an 8.1 average with two games over 13 points.
Wow.
I mean, he was running back 18 over the last 9 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, but he definitely like showed up when people needed him, but like it was like three games of he had like 27 right. points, 15 points, and like 12.
Right. And then just back down to nothing.
Yeah. The Giants ran the ball 454 times last year, which is around 27 times per game, which ranked smack dab in the middle of rush attempts per game as well as rush attempts. So obviously this type of offense makes sense in an RPO style with Daniel Jones, or a statue-esque quarterback with Drew Lock is going to lean more towards checkdowns in my opinion. So for running backs, we obviously want the statue who isn't going to rush the ball 80 times a year and vulture touchdowns, but with a 29th ranked offensive line, it's still not going to be pretty. Like Tony mentioned earlier, Devin Singletary did have more efficiency on the Bills with Brian Daboll. So we could see a resurgence in him, or a better usage and understanding of like, he's not the bell cow guy, but you can be efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So again, I don't know where this perception in my brain came from. I think I just psyoped myself. So he's currently running back 32 around Javonte, Brian Robinson, Nick Chubb, and Austin Eckler. And I think I'd honestly just rather rip Trey Benson at running back 30 or Tua and Gus Bus at a later type at this turn, because this section of running back is pretty ugly. So the volume might actually be there for Singletary to smack right back in the back of his O-lineman with around 220 touches on the year, which would be 18th in carries for the position last year.
I had him projected a reasonable projection would be 225.
But like the problem with me and him and like my belief in him is he's small. He's like 5'7".
He's a little guy.
So, but for someone who has efficiency metrics of yards per touch, juke rate, and evaded tackles below 25th, I'm kind of good on him. The floor is real low, and the ceiling is going to come 2 to 3 times a year with a potential quote-unquote bell cow role. But like I said earlier, I don't think Singletary is really built to be or can be efficient enough to make it up even as like a 9th round starter. I think he's going to be a good weekly plug and a flex play guy for boom weeks or two. But like, and the 9th round, I think you can kind of pick somebody better.
Sure.
And that's not like a knock against his talent. I think just like this team is so bad and he's not an elite talent like Breece Hall, right? Where like Breece Hall, the fade was because of his injury, even though that offense was ass, but like the dude is so good with the ball in his hands. So like, I don't think Devin Singletary is that kind of player. So after Devin Singletary, it's Eric Gray, Tyrone Tracy, and Gary Brightwell. All these guys might have some value as the splits are going to be frustrating after Singletary. So a late round deep bench hold can potentially do something if injuries do happen. I never scouted Tyrone Tracy. He did play college in football, or sorry, he did play ball in college for 6 years and still only managed to score a 51 out of 100 in JJ Zacharyson's prospect model. The upside of Tracy is that he is a pass catcher, so he could potentially carve out a pass catching role as he is a converted wide receiver. If Drew Locke is the main guy, he'll be a week 6 fab article guy that people missed in the 1st round and will spend most of their money on because they missed the first Puka type and they're going to be pissed about that nothing happens because of him. But something to keep in the back of your mind, especially with anemic offense and O-line. So we can go down the schedule, but that's pretty much what I have for the G-men, even though I only like talked for like 30 minutes and being like, hey, Malik Nabers is good.
I want to rain on the Tyrone Tracy parade real quick, if I may.
Go for it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, he's great. He was a pass catcher. First off, he was fucking a wide receiver at Northwestern. That's hardly a pass catcher. He just did cardio for 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And second off, I get that, like, Daniel Jones, check down monster. All about it. But at the same time, they have a dude that is a check down god already. So, Tyrone Tracy, you're not going to take food out of Wandale Robinson's mouth. Get the fuck out. That's it.
So, I would draft Nabers and expect wide receiver 22. Floor, fuck it. Let it rip. Devin Singletary is fine as your 4th running back on your team. Daniel Jones is a fine bench quarterback who can potentially have 100 rushes on the year. All right, let's go down their schedule and see how right Ryan is about them only winning 2 games this year.
Okay.
I'm looking at it. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
First game, Vikings.
Loss.
Okay, 2nd game, Commanders.
Ooh, you know what? I'm going to have them split against the Commanders this year. So I'm going to... it's either a win or a loss. I'm going to have them split, though.
Okay. Next game, Browns.
Loss.
Next game, Cowboys.
Loss.
Seahawks.
Loss.
Bengals.
Loss. Eagles. Oh my god. Loss.
Steelers.
Loss.
That's a loss.
Tomlin all out head coach then.
That's when the quarterback change happens if they lose to the Giants.
Oh my god.
Commanders.
I gave them a win, so I'm calling this a loss. Okay. So I have them at 1 win so far.
It's a 7-game losing streak.
Panthers.
I'm calling that a loss because it's in Germany.
I'm calling that a win because it's in Germany.
Okay.
The Bucks.
Loss.
That'll be close. That's a win for me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the Baker facade's over. They play the Cowboys again. That's a loss.
On Thanksgiving, immediate loss.
don't even show up to the fucking field. Then they play the Saints.
Loss.
Yeah, it's a loss. That's fine.
Who's the quarterback? If it's Spencer Rattler, it's the Giants.
Oh my god.
Derek Carr. He's gonna go into that week. He's gonna go into that week having already 3,500 yards.
We're so bad.
We're so bad. All right. The Ravens.
And that's why we're doing the New Orleans Saints next week.
Oh no.
Sorry.
Ravens loss.
Ravens loss.
Falcons.
Loss.
I'm saying loss.
Colts.
Loss.
Yeah, it's a loss.
Then the last game of the season, Eagles.
Immediate loss. Just forfeit.
I think, yeah, again, it's one of those situations where the Eagles are trying to play playoffs and they're like, we got to rest our starters unless they choke like last year. But yeah, that is a potential 1-4 win team.
I have 3-14.
I have them 1 win and against one of them against Washington. That's it.
One win. Quinn Ewers, you are a Giant.
Woo! You did it.
Okay, so my question is, though, like, they spent all this money on defense and, like, Brian Burns and shit. Like, was the defense the reason why they lost so much last year? It wasn't great, right? But, like,
it was injuries.
Tibbs has been okay. He wasn't, like, worth his price of entry, his hype. But, like, I don't think Brian Burns is going to be the difference maker to, like, turn this team around.
I don't think it was the defense. Like, they were tied in a couple categories with Baltimore's defense last year when I went over the head coaching stuff for Mike McDonald, but
I think Kayvon Thibodeau is a really good complementary pass rusher. The fact that they have Thibodeau, Dexter Lawrence, and Brian Burns now means they probably have the best defensive line in the league.
Really?
I mean, the reason the defense sucked is because the offense kept turning the fucking ball over.
That's true.
Like,
there's always out there in gas.
Right. I don't know. I think they're going to try to play slow. They're going to try to shorten games. They're going to try to win with defense. And, like, they have a Lambo in the garage, you know? They got it. It's there. They can use it. I'd like it if they used it.
You got it, right? Like, all right, so we're going to put together a prayer circle for every bad juju at MetLife to protect Malik Nabers and kill Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh.
One soul for a soul.
All right. Speaking of soulless organizations, I got Washington. So okay, Let's get it started. Let me see if I can sell you on some Commanders. Like in New England last week and Seattle this week, it's a new day in Washington. Dan Snyder's gone, Riverboat Ron's gone, and Eric Bieniemy's out. Josh Harris is the new owner. Adam Peters is the new GM. Dan Quinn is the new head coach, and they're bringing back old Cliff Kingsbury, to be the offensive coordinator.
This is just the house of mid.
Oh, dude, no, I'm selling you on some shit. So Kingsbury's going to be running the show for all intents and purposes when it comes to the offense and all their shiny new toys, because Quinn is naturally a defensive guy. And you have to give the Commies credit. They recognize the holes in their system and were fairly proactive at tackling them, even if it's by doing dumb shit like having all the top quarterback prospects interview at once like it was reality TV.
That was the funniest shit.
That's so stupid. But I give them credit. They had 6 picks in the top 100 and went quarterback, D-tackle, cornerback, tight end, guard, wide receiver. Love it. FTN had Washington's offensive line ranked as 28th in the league. And honestly, I think they're kind of underrated. Kansas City's backup guard, Nick Allegretti, who was huge in Casey's playoff run, it was signed to play guard. Tyler Biasid is a stud at center. The right side of the line is the same. Sam Cosmi, the right guard, is a fucking monster. But they don't have a left tackle.
Jaden Daniels can just run.
They play Micah Parsons twice, Brian Burns twice, and Josh Sweat twice, and they don't have a left tackle.
Maybe they're just going to play everything on the right side.
So Washington passed at the highest rate in the league last season, and they're going to an OC that had his team passing at the 6th highest rate in his last season as head coach.
Was that just like purely out of game script that they had to pass so much? Or
I think Cliff Kingsbury was like, we're going down with the ship, because that number is high, but Arizona was top 7 in rush attempts in both 2020 and 2021. So Cliff low-key likes to run the ball.
Okay.
Dude, are we back on Austin Eckler?
We're getting there. All right, so obviously Jaden Daniels and Kyler Murray are not a one-to-one comparison. I want to bring back our rookie guide here that you can buy for $10. Quote,
It's going to charity.
Daniels is also a slow processor who spent most of his big year at LSU throwing to guys that were beyond the standard definition of college open. He will try to make his progressions, but I saw a lot of quick reads and then pulling the ball down to run. He'll need to develop a quicker trigger since he gets in trouble when he holds the ball too long. For Daniels to be at his best from a pure throwing perspective, he needs an absolutely pristine pocket. since his natural instinct is to take off and run the second it collapses.
This sounds a lot like a guy we talked about a lot.
My next sentence was, Jaden has Justin Fields syndrome.
There it is.
He starts to overprocess and either makes the wrong read or immediately pulls the ball down and starts to run. A smart offensive game plan would ask Daniels to make one or two quick reads at the most and move the ball quickly while providing opportunities for the quarterback to improvise or run as needed. Luckily, the Kingsbury system is already talking about trending towards a heavier play action element, which should help these guys get open. Daniels being an average quarterback prospect in terms of accuracy is something I'll be interested in seeing, since his wide receivers at LSU were often so completely broken away from their coverage, and that sure as hell is not happening here. He has average offensive weapons, so there's a very real possibility that if his deep ball touch and playmake ability does translate to the league, he elevates perennial fantasy disappointments, but good actual wide receivers like Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson.
Right.
Optimistically, Daniels stays healthy, and while he probably isn't turning into a Kirk Cousins multi-read processor, he can hit his first two and make the correct call and deliver a strong pass. The fear is that a tall, lanky dude like Jaden is an injury risk, but let's be real, Anthony Richardson is built like the Killdozer, and he missed almost all of last season.
Hey, why does everybody keep doing this to me?
It's an upside game that we play, and I think we all agree that Daniels has it. I don't think Cliff lets him start the season, just grip it and rip it, but I think the playbook opens up a bit more as the season goes along and we start seeing Jaden put more on tape once like October rolls around. He's obviously high risk due to an unknown system and injury potential, so if I'm playing in a 12-team league come September, he is an ideal QB2 with league-breaking potential.
We said this about the guy you just slandered earlier.
Yep, so the bottom line is this. Jaden Daniels is QB10 on 4-for-4 and pick 103 on Underdog Best Ball, and he has the potential to win it all with his legs. At that price, I'm totally in. How many other guys being drafted at 10th overall in their position and outside the top 100 have the potential to win you your league? So, gentlemen, Jaden Daniels or CJ Stroud? Think about it.
No question, CJ Stroud.
Okay.
Dude, I got Houston winning AFC championship this year.
That's tricky because, like, I don't want to be like a Stroud slanderer, but like, didn't he finish as like QB11 last year?
Look, CJ Stroud is an incredible NFL quarterback for fantasy football.
I think I'm gonna fucking watch myself lose my season on this pick.
Jaden Daniels it is.
I think I'm going Jaden Daniels, man.
I just have a very bad feeling that, you know, his tendencies are going to take over in the first game or two, and he's going
to get fucking murdered.
He's going to take off and get his bell rung and like, welcome to the NFL, and then he's just going to be hesitant to run the whole, you know.
Jaden Daniels or Kyler Murray?
Ooh. Kyler Murray.
I feel like I'm a Twitter account for Kyler Murray because I defend this human being at least once a day at this point. I'm just like, why is everybody sleeping on Kyler, bro?
So Kyler's your guy?
Absolutely.
All right. Last, Jaden Daniels or Anthony Richardson?
Ooh. Anthony Richardson's going to have a comeback. Indy's going to be decent this year.
I'm sticking with my king, bro.
All right. Let's move on. Brian Robinson, he was a pleasant surprise last year, finishing running back 22 in fantasy points per game, which was a nice marginal return on investment if you got him when he was being valued as an RB3. Yeah.
Did I not say Brian Robinson last year? Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yes, you did. He failed to log 1,000 yards rushing, but he scored 9 touchdowns to go along with 36 catches for 367 yards through the air. Threats to Brian Robinson's touches this year are exactly the same as they were last year, but replace Antonio Gibson with whatever's left of Austin Eckler, right? So B-Rob returned his running back 22 season with just a 51% snap share, 29th among running backs. His team, Washington, dead last in run plays per game. He was 32nd in carries. His run block rating was 38th among running backs. He only scored 5 touchdowns on the ground and he was running back 22.
Do you think Austin Eckler eats into his almost 400 yards production and pass plays last year?
I will provide you some quality insight. Robinson was a beast last year because of how effective he was as a receiver. He and James Cook were the only backs that had more than 40 targets to have an above 10 yard per reception number.
Wow.
Brian Robinson, among all running backs, had the highest yards per reception in the league.
That's fucking crazy.
10.22 yards per catch, Brian Robinson.
Man.
He was 25th in running back receptions, but he had 4 receiving touchdowns. I think Brian Robinson was a low-key bell cow last year. He had a 75-25 split of the carries with Gibson and a 40-60 target split. That's an insane work rate.
Well, also, too, like, if you look at, we talked about it last week, if Gibson's, like, 4 fumbles and under 70 snaps, like, you're just not going to get the ball anymore, right? Like,
correct.
That's just what it was.
So, if I had to ponder my orb, this looks to me like another year where Brian Robinson returns an RB2 season. His rushing numbers will go up since Cliff Kingsbury is an A and B gap run aficionado, which is where Washington's strength is on the interior run blocking. Both guards have put up over 80 PFF run block grades in the last couple of years, so he's got good blocking up front. He should be more successful as a pure runner and with more reps because the offense won't pass at the highest rate in the league. There is fear that Eckler will poach some of the work, and he will, but Robinson put all of that up with a much more explosive Gibson doing it last year. I'm rolling with Brian Robinson again this year as a flex with RB2 upside. His touchdowns will go down. His passing work might take a minor hit, but his run utility will increase.
What was the check down rate of Jaden Daniels? Did he ever check it down in college? I never saw that on his tape.
He didn't have to.
I mean, yeah, it was just like, hey, you got 3 NFL caliber receivers or you run the ball, right? I think that's like what concern. I'm not worried about Austin Eckler. I'm more worried about Jaden Daniels.
I totally get it. But I think transitioning to Jaden Daniels while also transitioning to a more run-heavy approach is what shakes out for Robinson.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So he is running back 25 on 4-for-4's aggregate rankings, and he's going at pick 111 in best ball. So, gentlemen, Brian Robinson or Zach Moss?
Brian Robinson.
Who's Zach Moss on? He's on the
Bengals.
Bengals? Ah, shit. I think I go Zach Moss.
Okay. Brian Robinson or Devin Singletary?
Ooh, Brian Robinson.
Yeah.
All right. Brian Robinson or Jaylen Warren?
So I'm a big B-Rob fan. I'm going Brian Robinson.
It's okay. Going to burn me this year, but I am in on the Steelers weapons.
Oh, yeah. Dude, Jaylen Warren. I love Jaylen Warren this year. We'll get there.
Arthur Smith is going to take a dump on our chest. And you know what? We're going to next year be like, why did we do that?
Yep. So, all right. I don't think Austin Eckler is necessarily dust, but he's pretty close to it after years of overwork in Los Angeles. Coming to Washington will probably give him some new juice, and a role where he doesn't have to be the alpha will most likely increase his efficiency. Cliff Kingsbury loved using 2 backs and 0 tight ends in his last year at Arizona, so I can see quite a few formations where Daniels, Robinson, and Eckler are all in the backfield at once. I think that Eckler will have some utility and as a pass catcher and as the occasional spellback. The contract he got from Washington indicates this isn't, they're not here for a long time, baby. He's here for a good time. He's owed $0 in guaranteed money in 2025 and would be a cheap cap cut. He essentially got the same contract as Zach Moss did in Cincy, and that doesn't scream to me like, hey, we're going to give this guy more touches than the guy who's been here for 2 years.
Yep.
I think the screen pass works for Washington this year, and Eckler can be great there, but Robinson, as we said, is no slouch in the passing game. With his age, tread, and profile, Eckler projects to be a guy to get about 80 targets and maybe 100 carries. Either way, he's the clear B in this backfield, and his lack of explosiveness makes him a fade for me, the second year in a row, by the way. I'm fading him as a mid-20s running back, just like how I faded him as RB2 last year, so follow us. Austin Eckler's still getting love in some places. He's somehow 4-for-4's aggregate running back 23 ahead of Brian Robinson.
Huh?
It's what it was a week ago. And he was two picks behind him in best ball at 113 overall. So Austin Eckler or Tajay Spears.
Ooh. That's so fucking gross.
I like Tajay Spears too much. I'm going Tajay.
Yeah, give me Tajay.
All right, moving on. I wrote other ones, but they're not interesting. So Terry McLaurin is going into his sixth season in the NFL, and his numbers are the fucking same. Outside of his rookie year, he's had between 120 and 134 targets, 77 to 87 catches, 1,002 to 1,191 yards, and 4 to 5 touchdowns. That's just this is what he does. So in four of those years, he was a wide receiver 2, and last year he was actually had a dip and was a low-end wide receiver 3. It should be clear by now that Terry has a range of outcomes that's almost as clearly defined as it gets. However, a lot of the peripherals would really seem to indicate that if he's ever going to take that step and become like a top 20, now's the time. He has over 90 PFF grades at all three levels of the receiving tree. He was 8th in deep targets last year. Jaden Daniels likes to throw the ball deep. If I look at his air yards, ADOT, yards per route run, and targets, he's right next to DJ Moore, who we all know is a wide receiver 1. So just putting that out there. However, while DJ Moore's target catch rate was 72%, Terry's was 62%. So only 62% of Terry McLaurin's targets were deemed catchable. And that ranking was 76th among all wide receivers. He's trying, man.
It's so bad.
He's trying. He only dropped 1 pass last year.
What? That's it?
Yeah, he has 17 charted drops in his 5-year career.
What?
So, yeah.
Insane.
So Terry's not a dynamic yards after catch guy. Like, he's not going to take a screen pass 70 yards to the house. But he's a strong mid-range to deep possession receiver who can win at, you know, 2 and 3. So if you add in a rushing quarterback who's also a rookie, trends would indicate that he might be getting the 2023 Michael Pittman treatment and just getting loaded up with targets. So I snagged this part from episode 882 of J.J. Zacharyson's Late Round Podcast. Since 2019, 18 teams had an RPO pass rate of 15% or more. Of those 18 teams, 56% of them had more than one player with a 20 or more target share. That's 26% higher than other teams. So you have a 56% chance that two guys will have 20% targets. So it'll be like kind of how Philly did it with Devonta and AJ Brown, where it's just all the targets just go to those two dudes.
Right.
So Cliff Kingsbury was an offensive coach or the head coach for 3 years in Arizona. In that time, or 4 years. In that time, Arizona ranked 3rd, 1st, 2nd, and 6th in RPO rate. So that's a lot. Rookie quarterbacks are historically bad for their pass catchers, but there's also a chance that McLaurin's target share rockets up. He's got a clear path to an increase in volume and an increase in catches, yards, and touchdowns. However, I think we would have to see a 6th-year breakout for him to truly ascend. For what it's worth, I think there's a chance he could end up as a middle-of-the-pack wide receiver too. So while he's going to be a solid player, he's most likely not a weak winner on a consistent basis. This could be Terry McLaurin's best statistical season, but what does that ceiling actually look like?
Wide receiver 22.
Well, wide receiver 31 on 4-for-4's rankings. He's going at pick 57 on underdog. Gentlemen, Terry McLaurin or Tank Dell?
Ooh, I'm going Tank.
Yeah, I was slandering Stroud, but I'm back in, dude.
Okay. Terry McLaurin or Christian Kirk?
Ooh. I don't know, guys. I don't know. Do I disrespect my Jags? I'm going McLaurin.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going Terry too.
Terry McLaurin or Rashee Rice?
Ooh, goddamn.
One dude's going to be suspended for one game, so it's going to affect his target share.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Rice. I'm going to go with the better proven offense, yeah.
Okay. All right, Jahan Dotson, He improved in every part of his game last season, and his touchdowns went down by 5. Whoops. As a result, he was wide receiver 38 his rookie year, and he ended last year as wide receiver 67.
That's all right. He's coming back this year.
106 targets opened up this year. Dotson should see some of them, depending on who it is that gets the second part of that RPO target share. But if we look back at wide receiver target leaders on Kingsbury teams, it gives us this. Wide receiver 1 averages 8.35 targets per game. Wide receiver 2 averages 6.49 targets per game. So if Daniels can fling it, man, like, there's a chance. There's meat on the bone for this wide receiver room to get after, even with a big reliance on one target. But once again, we need to remind ourselves, this is still a rookie quarterback with limited field reading ability and a tendency to run as soon as the pocket gets hot. It's the same logic that makes me want to fade the rest of this room. I worry about ceiling and consistency. Nobody in their right mind thought Darnell Mooney was going to be serviceable his last year in Chicago, so you can use the same logic here in Washington.
Hold on, hold on. There was one guy who believed.
he still does, actually.
God.
So Dotson and to a lesser extent McCaffrey are going to be very interesting players to watch as the year progresses, but I don't really have a ton of confidence in their ability to be meaningful fantasy assets in the 2024-2025 NFL season.
Okay.
Last but not least, what you all came for, Washington Commanders tight end talk.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now, very few things annoy me in fantasy like an ambiguous tight end room. Like, what the hell is that? You need the blocker, you need the guy that can play in the slot, and you need another guy that's kind of in the middle.
And you need the old.
Well, apparently you do, because
they got Ertz this year.
Yep, Washington went out and signed Zach Ertz to a one-year deal, which makes some sense since they let Logan Thomas walk. They drafted the greatest tight end to ever exist, Ben Sinnott, in the second round, 53rd overall.
Oh, hell yeah.
He was our unanimous TE2 of the class, and like some really smart and totally not balding dude said in February, he was going to be everyone's favorite sleeper by the time draft season rolled around. Anyways, he's a plus blocker on the edge. He's got a lot of pop as a receiver. Unquestionable dog mentality. The only thing in his way is a 33-year-old tight end coming off a season-ending quad injury in October. Do you remember he was on the Lions for like a week?
Yeah, and immediately cut him, right?
Yep, sure did. It's perfectly reasonable for the expectation to be Ertz transitioning into Sinnott, but like, I'm just going to say it, I would not be surprised if our boy starts the year on top of the depth chart. So,
I wouldn't be surprised either. And I think it's great that they picked up Ertz. That was before the draft, though, right?
Yeah, and I think it's important to employ the elderly.
Well, yeah. And I mean, but it'll be good. It'll be good for Sinnott to get some mentorship from Ertz from his playing days in Philly and stuff.
Well, he was Cliff Kingsbury's guy in Arizona.
In Arizona, yeah. And if anything, the tight ends are going to be great. Just in the fact that Jaden Daniels got a lot to figure out this year, transitioning to the NFL. And those just might be his safety nets, Ertz and Sinnott, you know?
So this is my official press conference. I'm meeting with the media right now, and I would like to formally declare that I am upgrading Ben Sinnott from do not draft and redraft officially to the blob.
Yes.
Ooh.
Ben Sinnott, you've been blobbed. Congrats. It's a risky play because I believe Kingsbury and Ertz have history together, and he's going to get his boy some touches. And there's also like, but I'm saying there's similar meat on the bone, like the wide receiver room, like at the tight end position. After Cliff finally got Ertz, let me tell you the target numbers for tight ends in Cliff Kingsbury's offense. 115, 108, 86.
Nice.
Shit, dude. Even Logan Thomas had 77 targets last year. Just by the way.
He doesn't have a brain anymore.
Jesus Christ.
I think he's got like 12 concussions. Like that's something that's ridiculous.
Yep. So somehow Logan Thomas was tight end 17 last year.
I don't know. Oh my God, dude.
Right. Yeah, right.
So if Sinnott can get there, he's going to beat Logan's line of 55 catches, 496, and his absolute ceiling, tight end 12.
No, I absolute, believe it. Absolute ceiling, dude. Sam LaPorta.
So oh, I can see him reasonably going for between 55 to 60 for about 503 touchdowns. But with Ertz there, who knows what his level of involvement is going to be right away. He might not be someone I'm drafting in September unless I know for sure he's the tight end one. But if I'm the type to wait and just stream tight ends, his snap share is something absolutely worth monitoring.
I'll take a gamble. Fortune favors the bold, right?
That's true. I saw that on a pack of cigarettes once.
That's right.
Ben Sinnott, tight end 28 on 4-for-4's aggregate rankings, going at pick 153 on Underdog. So, gentlemen, Ben Sinnott or Chig Okonkwo?
Wow. I don't know, man. I feel it's like it's I feel like I feel yeah, it's got to be Sinnott because Tennessee's got a too many good wide receivers for Okonkwo to get that many targets this year. So
I'm going with our guy Hunter's famous line: "No refunds on those Chig shares you bought."
Yep. Ben Sinnott or Juwan Johnson?
Wow, Juwan Johnson's still in New Orleans, right?
Unfortunately.
Ooh, no! Nah, I'm gonna go Sinnott.
I love okay. jams, but it's Ben.
Ben Sinnott or Luke Musgrave?
Ooh, in Green Bay, I like Musgrave in Green Bay. I'm going Musgrave.
Okay.
I've been slandering who the fuck do you want in the Packers receiving room, and I want shares of Luke Musgrave. I think he has like one of the highest QBR ratings for tight ends when targeted.
Oh, sure. So you're going Luke Musgrave?
Yes.
Okay. So that is the Washington Commanders. Let's run through the schedule because it's fun. Keep score at home. Tell me what you think. Week one at Tampa Bay.
I'm going loss.
Okay. It's a squeaked out win.
Okay. At home against the Giants.
50-10 win.
Well, I gave the Giants a win there, so I'm sticking with that.
Whoa.
Monday Night Football at Cincinnati.
L.
Loss.
Arizona at Arizona.
L.
Loss.
At home, Cleveland.
L.
Loss.
At Baltimore.
Loss. L.
Home against the Panthers.
That's a W.
Yeah, I'll give them one.
Home against the Chicago Bears.
Loss. W.
Whoa.
That was so a troll. That was a troll. It's an L.
So Ryan and I will be back next week with... all right.
I gave you good information on the Giants.
Okay, speaking of, at New York Giants.
I'm going to go win just because I had them splitting against the Giants. So,
home against the Steelers.
L. This will be a tough game, but I'm going to say loss.
In Philadelphia.
L. Loss.
Home against Dallas.
L.
Loss.
Home against Tennessee.
Ooh, I'm going to say loss.
I'm going to say W.
At New Orleans.
Nah, in the Superdome, loss.
I think they're going to win. I think this is all where right. we see the collapse.
At home against Philly.
L.
Loss.
At home against Atlanta.
That'll be close, and it'll be the end of the season, and it'll be like a crazy come-behind win.
This is going to be why the Falcons are a wild card team instead of a division winner.
Okay. I also have a win, and then they end the season in Jerry World in Dallas.
Loss.
Yeah.
Okay, I have them at 6-11.
I want to say I only had them at 4 wins, I think.
Between our three teams, we have a total of 15 wins projected. And
someone's going to hit, though.
And that includes the fact that 4 of these games are
against together. Each other.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's not great. So thank you guys for sticking around. We're going to do, since you've already been listening for 2 hours, we're going to do an on-air production meeting where we pick what teams we're going to do next. So I'm sharing the screen with you guys right now. Tell me what team you're profiling next week.
And remember, don't kick Craig until we're done recording.
Never. I did that on purpose. Totally wasn't an accident.
I'm going to be doing New Orleans.
Ryan Edgecombe has selected the New Orleans Saints.
I'm going to Carolina.
Shane, ooh, okay. Shane with the Panthers.
We're getting the shit out of the way.
You're getting the NFC South out of the way.
I want to go Pittsburgh next week.
Okay.
We'll see what the Steelers got to say. So next week, wow, we thought we were really selling them with Seattle, the Giants, and Washington. We got Pittsburgh, Carolina, and New Orleans coming at you next week.
There will be more than 15 wins.
At some point. So we're back at full strength. This was our first full house research episode. So we thank you guys for sticking around and hanging out and being cool. We appreciate you. Thank you for all your energies listening to us ramble.
Go snipe your best ball competitors.
Yes. Get their asses, respectively.
Ruin their stacks.
Yep. All right. So we'll see you guys next week.
Peace.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
This is a certified hood classic. How long I gotta climb up this hill?